You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. Frequencies are 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard on the World Wide Web, Ellen, all over.
All over the world. And we have listeners from all over the world, too. We have people from Europe and, well, actually from everywhere. On 1510 WWBC, you'll find all of our archive shows. And actually, you can even listen live by just hitting that Listen Live button that's right on that 1510wwbc.com. And then, of course, we post all of our shows on our website, SetaMediaInc.com, and on our Facebook pages, which is also under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and Sita Media.
That's right. So on Mondays, for the last 12 years,
wow,
Ellen O'Neill and myself and Samantha, when we need her, she does show up, helps us with social media and co-hosting as well. We sit here and we discuss kitchen table topics and things that are going on right here and around the nation. And Ellen, we've had so many nonprofits that come on our show and share really valuable information in such an unscripted manner with all our listeners and on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. But one of them that have always supported us was the Marine Resource Council and Dr. Lisa Soto.
Yes.
And she's here today. You're going to be on the first segment.
Excellent.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me again.
Dr. Lisa Soto is the Executive Director of the Marine Resource Council. And boy, her bio is great. And she went to UCF as well, like my children. So I love it. And then the second segment is with a gentleman, Mr. Bob Barnes, who is the founder of, what is it called?
Aspiration
Academy. My goodness. You've done so much news. He was in the news business. He was in the military. He also helped with nonprofits right here in town, and
Children's
he saw a need to do his own. And so we'll be talking to you the second segment. Welcome, and thank you for being on our show.
Pleasure. Pleasure to be here.
But before we go to Dr. Lisa Soto, I have a, you know how we always do a little Sita social, right?
Absolutely.
So I was speaking with my husband this morning about the state of our world. And sometimes you feel like human beings are self-destructing on our planet because of the wars and the hatred and division and those who spread fear because of whatever, skin color, racism, religion, whatever. And he made a really interesting point, and he said, listen, great people like Mother Teresa and others have said, if you cannot find a good person in this world, become one yourself. And I think it's wonderful when you have friends like Lisa and Mr. Barnes and you, Ellen, and myself and others who, as we get older, it's like fine wine. We age, we become wiser, kinder, gentler, because it is our, I think it is our, my ambition anyways, to leave this world a better place than we found it.
And one of the things I love about the radio show is the fact that we do get educated. And one of my great quotes from Maya Angelou is, when you know better, you do better.
That's right.
So we I think the show has done that for both of us, Sita. I mean, the guests that we've had on the show, I think we've been educated and aware now. You know, so, you know, just like Dr. Lisa Soto, I was telling her, I said, it was like, you know, I started recycling more and I started, you know, doing because I knew better, so I did better.
Well, the thing is, we're all human beings, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what part of the planet you live in. Everybody wants to be loved and appreciated. They want food, water, shelter. They want equality, right? Mm-hmm. There's inequalities that exist all over the world. And if we can help in a little way in this service-oriented world to do our part, why not?
Exactly.
And that's what I think, you know, when I think of people who are giving back, I do think of Dr. Lisa Soto, and I think of her being a leader. Well, who are leaders? Leaders are just ordinary people that stepped up to the plate. Mm-hmm. and said, I will take the lead role in this, whether it is opening a nonprofit to feed other people and coach them like Mr. Barnes, or whether it is somebody like Lisa who decided that our environment, planet Earth, is worth it. And so she's devoted her entire life to what she's doing. And yeah, I was just going to read off your bio, but I think I'm just going to ask you to go ahead and tell our listeners. I mean, many people graduate from college and they decide to go into law or medicine or pharmacy or open a business or have a trade, go into military. But you chose to give back to the most precious thing of all, the Indian River Lagoon and the environment. Without the environment, we're nothing. We need it in order to sustain life. And so you decided that that's what you were going to do. Help us learn about nitrogen, phosphorus, and muck and things like that. So tell our listeners, Dr. Soto, how you got started with the Marine Resource Council.
Well, that's a good question. And it actually goes farther before I ever got to MRC. When I was a young student at Florida State University is where I started my bachelor's degree. I was actually there in a different degree program, and as part of my electives, I was always like wandering over to the science buildings and taking biology, chemistry, and physics electives. And then I went off to Florence, Italy, and I came back, and I was like, all right, I'm ready to just wrap up my degree now. And I went in to talk to my counselor, and she's like, it turns out you have a degree in biology with minors in chemistry and physics. Why don't you just go with that? So I kind of by happenstance ended up with this multivariate, you know, science degree from Florida State, because that's what I love to do. I love the chemistry. I love physics. I loved water quality. And I was a water person. I grew up in South Florida. I was a surfer. I liked to go diving. I liked to go down to the Keys. What, you know, it was pristine and gorgeous and amazing back then. I think what drove me to want to enter the environmental field as a profession was watching us destroy our Florida waterways over my lifetime. You're like just watching the Keys slowly degrade until, you know, it is what it is today. Watching our canals become more and more polluted. And then, you know, just realizing like, wow, Florida's about the water. You know, why are we killing our waterways? How are we going to eat the fish and the clams and the oysters and all this good food? So it's kind of selfishly motivated, right? I love water. I love to eat fish and clams and seafood and shellfishery, and Florida was the place. And now all that's gone. So really in my short career, which has only spanned about 3 decades now, excuse me.
She just gave away her age.
It's gone downhill very, very quickly. It's kind of scary, but I'm just still plugging along. So it's been, you know, I started at an environmental laboratory where I was a chemist, and I went to the Department of Environmental Protection as a regulator. Then I ended up at a research laboratory called Midwest Research Institute. I was at Brevard County Natural Resources doing petroleum toxic waste cleanup. And then I ended up at the University of Central Florida doing stormwater. And then I came to Marine Resources Council.
Right. And you wonder why more people, we see the people on their boats. I remember when we lived in Tortoise Island and we were on the river for 20-some years. I just gave away my age too. But there were always people who were polluting. You would see stuff in the water. And you wonder why people with all that education, big boats that they have, spending all that time, and they do love the waterways, why are they polluting? And you, and it's great that the Marine Resource Council does a lot of educating. And education is a key to life, right? Hopefully. So tell us a little bit about some of the things you guys do at the Marine Resource Council.
Sure. Well, to address your question, there's a lot of reasons. People have different reasons for doing what they do. So sometimes people know that it's a problem and they do it anyway. That's a different kind of a person than one who doesn't know that it's a problem, right? So some people, you just tell them, for example, grass clippings. People would never know grass clippings were a pollutant. They would just assume, I can throw my grass clippings in the canal and it goes away. And I, you know, it's a natural thing. It's
yes.
Natural, just like a stick or a tree leaf or anything else, except that there are so many of them. There are so many lawns. There's lawns shouldn't even be here. And so it's an unnatural thing in our system. And it's got chemicals and fertilizers on it. So that grass clipping, what somebody perceives to be a natural thing that maybe can go in the water, it's not. It's unnatural for our system because we have so much more turf and so many chemicals applied to the turf that grass clipping now becomes a pollutant. And then there are people who just think dilution is the solution. And that's been the mantra for a long, long time. You know, so people just dumping their sewage from their boat into whatever waterway they happen to be anchored in at that moment, because they just assume it'll just dissolve
and
away.
Somebody else will take care of it.
And the bacteria
problem.
Will take care of it, and mm-hmm. it's all natural. And once again, at some time, many, 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 probably hundreds or maybe thousands of years ago now, that was okay. There weren't that many people, there wasn't that much waste, and there was a lot more fresh water for it to dissolve in. Well, that's not the case anymore. So we do not. You know, we should not be dumping our boat septic systems into the lagoon or any water body, but that's still going on. So what do we do at MRC? We do education, restoration, action, and science. So we do a lot of advocacy. You know, I'm going to be here talking about, you know, you people out there who are politically inclined, you know, get on the phone and start talking to your city council people and your county commissioners about what they're doing to reduce pollution. How are they planning growth? Are they implementing low impact development? Because that's a big part of it. Everything that gets built on the land eventually runs off into a canal that pollutes our waterways. So what's happening on the landscape has a big impact on the water quality in our state, not only along our coast, but all the rivers. The St. John's River is also, you know, suffering from too much pollution. Our canals, our beautiful springs, if you've ever experienced Florida springs, they're incredible and they're polluted now. So, you know, it's like everything we're doing is coming from our yards and our landscape into the water. So everything
Again,
you're doing on your yard.
Humans doing it. I know.
Makes a difference.
I've spoken to people about little things like dog waste. Come on, think about where that's going to end up if you don't pick it up. Or someone was talking about the dollar weeds in their yard and what chemicals they're going to use to kill the dollar weed. Well, think about it when the rains come, what's going to happen. Or, you know, we've talked about it on our show before with you about plastics, septic tanks that are leaking. And people are really could do things. Small changes is all it takes to make a difference. And I really appreciate that you guys are doing all this education, but I still see people who are not doing the right things. So help us to understand why they're not doing it.
Well, what are they doing? It depends on what they're doing as to why they're doing or not doing it. The cost. Cost is always a thing. So I want to go back to something that you said. So yeah, it's all coming from our landscapes. We just released the report card, mm-hmm. which shows that, you know, every year Marine Resources Council grades the health of the Indian River Lagoon, and we release a report card that is an education tool or an advocacy tool that anybody can use. It's divided into 10 different regions of the lagoon, and you can see, you know, what's going on in your community and how bad your grade is. Sunshines and rainbows.
Yeah.
How good your grade is. Or not, and when you're talking to your city council person. So the report card is on our website, savetheirl.org. One of the things that you see immediately is that, you know, in some areas of the lagoon, we had to rescore things and call and develop a grade called an F-, because it's that bad. And then some areas of the lagoon, it's actually like a C, which is not great, but better than an F-. So immediately we can start asking questions like, what are they doing right in Indian River County that we're doing wrong in Brevard, okay? And so you can start comparing regions with regions, and we can also see which tributaries are the most polluted tributaries that are bringing all those contaminants into the lagoon. The report card actually has some good news, which is that water quality from the previous year got better. However, we've got this quandary about why the seagrass has continued to decline, and we've got manatees starving. So MRC is focusing in the next year on three different initiatives. One is to put together all the seagrass scientists and seagrass practitioners in a room, hold a seagrass assembly, and figure out what in the world's going on and why is the seagrass not coming back, and do we need to plant it, and if we do, what does that look like? And the second thing is to try to focus and get some funding to test for herbicides. So herbicides, there are a lot, is a great, you know, suite of herbicides. Some of them are highly toxic to humans, and yet nobody's testing for them. So let's put that to rest. Let's test every tributary for herbicides. If we don't have herbicides, great. We know it's not herbicides killing the seagrass. And then the third thing is to continue, and this is where we need the help of your listening audience, continue trying to push low impact development strategies on our city and county leadership. They need to change land development regs, change building codes, come up with different ways of zoning processes and really integrate in a very real and critically needed manner a better way to develop the land that's not going to kill our water.
And not be hypocritical about it, because we've seen so many green spaces gone in Melbourne. We've seen the impact of so many people move into our state, our roads, I personally, I mean, if you drive on Wickham Road, you could see the congestion. All those people are flushing toilets. All those people are using antibiotics, and it's going in the waterways.
And herbicide.
I mean, yeah, all those people are watering grass. I mean, and so I think you're right. If you just get people to start thinking the minute they wake up about Mother Earth, the minute you step your feet on it, start thinking about it, it would change so much. I mean, we've seen what happens when there's red tide. Then all the politicians want a photo op. And they want to talk about the red tide and the allergies and how much money it's going to cost to test the water, the dead fish wash ashore. But after that clears, there's still stuff to be done in the lagoon.
Sure.
We're watching the manatees now. So talk to us a little bit about the manatees. Everybody's all concerned about the dead manatees, the manatees that are hungry, the ones who are coming in Satellite Beach and the canal. What's going on with that?
Yeah, the latest, I think everybody is probably aware that the manatees started dying last winter because of the lack of seagrass in the lagoon, and they were dying at a rate of about 20 a week. Well, this January, they started dying at a rate of about 40 a week, so it's actually worse this year than it was last year, which is not getting the press coverage because I think people are just burnt out on the horror of it all, which is, but there's a lot to do. So it is a byproduct of a collapsing estuary is that the animals that eat the grass are all going to starve to death. So actually, we also ran the fisheries numbers, and if fish are all dying also. So seagrass is the foundational basis of the entire food web. So when the seagrass disappears, just like any other food chain, like when the vegetable source is gone, then the very first thing, the vegetarians that eat the vegetable disappear, and then the carnivores that eat the vegetarians disappear. So the manatees are vegetarians. So they're going to be one of the first ones. Pinfish, sea turtles. There's a lot of bait fish. Those are all disappearing. So then the next cascading, the medium-sized snappers and so on, they're disappearing. And then the snook. So we're already starting to see the snook numbers are declining. So it's just a manifestation of an estuary that is flipping. You know, it's turning into something different. So it's not unexpected. Everybody expected this to happen. It's just a horrible thing to watch.
Does it have anything to do with the fact that everybody's working from home now? And I mean, and people are home and not going out as much. You'd think that it would have cut back, right? Because we weren't using as much fuel or something, but that didn't happen either, huh?
If anything, we saw a lot more waste in the groundwater. Septics, people are more home, so they're in their, they're using their own septic tanks more, right? And the groundwater numbers increased for phosphorus and nitrogen. But, as far as using the lagoon, I think during the COVID year, we had more people on the lagoon than we ever did.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
There's a lot of people
out there.
Yeah, it's good.
Then maybe weren't able to go out before.
But the water quality is better. So it's not about water quality. The water quality, at least according to the state's data, the state only monitors for nitrogen, phosphorus, turbidity, and algae, chlorophyll A, which is a measure of algae. So those four things have gotten better, but the seagrass continues to decline. So is our herbicides killing seagrass? Herbicides kill other kinds of plants? Possibly. Well, we just need to get. We need to figure that out. You know, let's test for herbicides. If they're not there, then it's not herbicide. But until we test
that, we got to figure it out.
We need to put that one to bed.
So we need all our
right?
politicians to listen up and start helping to get more funds into Brevard to help fund the research for that.
Oh, not just Brevard. We got six counties. We cover from Volusia down to Palm Beach.
So from Volusia to Palm Beach.
Yeah.
So Rebecca Jones, who called in the other day, who is running for office, I'll speak to her later about this.
Okay.
And I have Nikki Fried's.
Good.
I have Nikki Fried's personal cell phone.
Yeah, we've got a great month of this.
And she's the commissioner of agriculture, so I'll have to talk to her too. So here's the thing. For our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Dr. Lisa Soto, and she is the executive director of the Marine Resource Council. Now, I've seen a lot of chatter on Facebook about the half cent sales tax, and we all know that was supposed to help improve the water quality for all of us here. So talk to us a little bit how that half cent sales tax helped, and why should people understand that don't listen to people who are just speculating? Because it is helping, and you guys are doing great things with it. That I know.
Yeah, we get a little bit. The Save Our Indian River Lagoon sales tax is in Brevard County. Only passed in 2016 by an overwhelming majority of the residents of Brevard. So congratulations to us. It started collecting funding immediately. It collects about $30 to $40 million annually. And as part of that funding, they have to create a Save Our Indian River Lagoon project plan. It's on the website. Everything is out there on Brevard County's website.
Very transparent.
Yeah. They also have a Citizens Oversight Committee that was part of that referendum. Those are individuals that are appointed. They're volunteers just like us. Well, I'm not on it, but, you know, people in the community. And they make sure that the money, that our public tax dollars are being paid for projects that are going to improve the quality of the water of the Indian River Lagoon. So I have complete confidence that the county is proceeding according to the referendum. And everything that they're doing is going to help, okay? So we can argue, you know, nitpick here and there about, well, maybe more should be muck removal and less should be groundwater, sewer to septic conversions, whichever. Both of them are good. Everything that they've been doing is going to have an impact on water quality, and perhaps that is what we are seeing here. We are seeing, for the third year in a row, an improvement in water clarity. Maybe it's because of some of the projects. They've got 50 projects done now. They've got another probably 100 in the works. If you suspect anything, they're wide open, transparent. They meet the first Friday or second Friday of every month. Go to the COC meeting. Ask the staff questions. Go to the website and look at the giant list of projects that they're working on. Don't just make up stuff. Yeah. Nobody's doing anything.
So get educated and
yes,
act upon
are.
It, right?
Go look at what they're doing. They're doing a lot. We need to keep doing those things. We need to keep making our wastewater treatment plants better. There are much more efficient ways to treat wastewater now. We're going to Mars. We know how to deal with wastewater.
We've come a long way, right? We can do it here on Earth, too. So we all talk about getting the kids involved in volunteering, in cleaning up the beach, cleaning up the lagoon, giving back to the elderly. We talk about the kids reading books, just giving back. Because we're going to leave the planet one day, and it's going to be the kids taking over. What are you guys doing at the Marine Resource Council to get more students involved and to partner with other businesses and things like that?
Thank you.
To get our children involved.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the funnest part of the job as far as I'm concerned, is getting to work in the community and, of course, getting the young people engaged and excited and see that spark open up in their eyes when they get the aha moment. We're doing our Castaway Lagoon Castaway Summer Camp again this year. We just increased our education team. We have an amazing education team. I even have a special ed team member. So we're really expanding the Lagoon House capabilities. A Lagoon Castaway Camp is for kids age 8 to 13. We have two different sessions, and it's running 8 weeks this summer. We're increasing the number of field trips, and we now have, what are they calling, virtual field trips online, so you can actually go and just click on a field trip and walk your classroom through it. We have lesson plans online for teachers. We started a Kids for Conservation group with young people, and in fact, we're having our first virtual 5K fundraiser. I think it's open right now, so go to our website, savetheirl.org. You can virtually sign up, get the super cool t-shirt and the medal, and then run at your own convenience and get it done between, I think, March 22nd and April 22nd, Earth Day. So really getting the young people involved. Oh, we just started, one of our board members brought a product called the Sea Perch, which is a little remote-operated vehicle that they can build themselves and then remote-operate out into the lagoon, listen to fish sounds, collect water quality samples. And, and really trying to get experiential learning into the classroom, getting kids in the lagoon to have that moment of, aha,
I learned something.
I understand now.
And it's always nice when the kids can bring a friend. When the kids can bring their friends and make a project out of it, it's beautiful. And I see Mr. Barnes is listening because I think he's going to go back and try to incorporate this in what he's doing with Aspiration Academy. Now, one of the ways that we can all help is we get the community involved. I know Ellen and I have learned a lot from you. And, of course, I live with a conservationist, Dr. Begee, and his rainwater and watching the grass. He wouldn't kill anything. So how do we get more people in our community to not just talk about it, but get involved in taking care of our environment, recycle, reuse, and, most importantly, protect the Indian River Lagoon?
Yeah, well, go to our website, Save the IRL, Save the Indian River Lagoon, SaveTheIRL.org, and sign up to be a volunteer, and we will send you announcements. We're always doing at restoration education projects. We're doing oyster volcanoes right now, and even the kids can make them. They're little volcanoes, and we're putting a mangrove right in the middle. So we just had a workshop yesterday, and a bunch of young people were there building these volcanoes. They're like mud pies, but they're going out there to make habitat for oysters to grow on and to hold mangroves in place. We have just one example of so many cool volunteer opportunities that we have, or you can go to our website and learn more, savetheirl.org. You can see the report card presentation. We'll be presenting the report card again at Cape Canaveral on March the 21st in front of the City Council. I'm open to the public, so you know, if you live in the Cape Canaveral area, join us on March the 21st for a report card presentation.
So you and Steve Sharkey and all the awesome people at the Marine Resource Council, you've been working extremely hard. How did COVID affect you all?
Well, we just went about business as usual. I went into the office every day, like I do. We all separated, so I had my team kind of work out of their houses. We all got COVID. We all got the classic COVID.
Yeah.
Separately, we didn't share it with each other, but we, you know, everybody, you know, I suffered probably the worst, but everybody got through it, and we, you know, we closed the Lagoon House. It's still closed. Invitation, you know, you have to be there by invitation or call and make an appointment. And, you know, just trying to social distance, keeping the masks on and so on. We tried to be as safe as possible.
And events, really quick before Paul wrap us up. I know we always look forward to the margaritas. And
That was the toughest part. We had to cancel all our awesome events.
Yeah, we didn't get any margaritas for Christmas.
I know. We lost about $50,000 in revenue from the lack of events.
Yes. So anything coming up that our listeners on Viewpoint and Sita and Friends should
know
about?
We had to move our Love Our Lagoon annual awards banquet dinner celebration to November the 4th. It was supposed to be this February, but we were honoring a man who was concerned about he was an octogenarian that, you know, we didn't want to, you know, jeopardize any attendees. So we moved it to November the 4th. Love Our Lagoon
Which
celebration.
Which I will be able to attend, thank God, because I couldn't come to the other date. Yes.
Yep. You can go to the website and register now, savetheirl.org. Hope to see you all there. Thank you.
Paul has given us the bye-bye, but before she goes, Paul, just Dr. Soto, if you'd be so kind to give us the website one more time, because I do know you're always welcoming volunteers, you're always welcoming additional funds, and anyone who wants to bring their expertise and volunteer, so just give us the website one more time.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. The website is www.savetheirl.org.
Ellen, look forward
a great segment.
Yeah, another fantastic segment. And I look forward to going through
this. She has a spark in her eye when she speaks about the Indian River Lagoon. Like, I feel like I can just get in a little canoe and keep going.
Go paddle.
That's right.
Paddle, because she's so excited.
Well, everybody needs to tap into that report card and see if you can do any better, because when we know better, we do better. That's what Maya Angelou says. We're going to listen to our sponsors real quick on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll be right back after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC. We're on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7. And what a robust first segment with Dr. Lisa Soda with the Marine Resource Council. I feel like I could talk to her forever because as I get older, I'm getting more involved in the environment and gardening and nitrogen and phosphorus, and I'm learning about stuff and what goes in the earth and groundwater and septic tank. And it's fascinating when you think about it, because we human beings, we do contribute to what's happening in our environment.
Absolutely. And every time Dr. Lisa Soto comes on with the Marine Resource Council, I always look in the mirror, right? As soon as she says something, it's like, okay, is that something that I do, or is that something I can do better?
That's right.
So our next segment, Sita, is sponsored Aspiration Academy. Mr. Bob Barnes is sponsored by Bovier and Associates. They've been helping small businesses in Brevard County for over 25 years. They're a full-service CPA firm. They've been serving clients since 1993. They're trusted advisors, financial management team. They promote relationships with clients, and they ensure the highest level of client satisfaction. And you can find them right here in Brevard County. They've got quite a few folks on their team that you'd certainly be able to get in touch with. They have a free consultation, a complimentary consultation. Their offices are located 3210 North Wickham Road in Suite 5 in Melbourne, Florida.
Awesome. Yeah, they've sponsored other nonprofits before, and it was awesome. The minute I mentioned what Mr. Barnes does, we'll do it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So Mr. Barnes spent his four-year Air Force tour with the Armed Forces. He also worked with radio and television. He was a radio announcer, advertising representative, a manager, owner of radio stations in California and Ohio. He tried to retire, but I guess he started helping out on the Children's Hunger Project, and that led to him and him founding the Aspiration Academy. And your bio is great. I feel like I've known you all my life. You're the kind of guy that everybody wants people to grow older, bolder, and wiser and do stuff like you. So welcome to our show.
Well, I'm delighted to be here. I'm flattered by your nice words.
Yes.
The reality is that most other people do the hard work. I'm kind of like overseeing it a little bit, but the reality, as I say, is that these type of charities, like the Children's Hunger Project, which I founded about a dozen years ago with a couple of my buddies, Sam Jordan, Johnny Clark, and David Cohn, without the volunteers, which speaks highly of the Brevard County community, nothing would have happened. But the Children's Hunger Project led me to what you are so kind enough, and your sponsors so kind enough to let me talk about, is Aspiration Academy, and I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you. So, we all know about the Children's Hunger Project because we've had them on our show. Keith was on our show a couple of times. Why did you transition from that to Aspiration Academy? Because it's two different things.
Well, they are. I have a special place in my heart for young kids. When the Children's Hunger Project was founded, I knew nothing about child hunger. But I learned quickly once I found out the kids were going hungry in America, which quite frankly shocked me. And over the course of the years that I ran the charity, I learned also about other kids' needs as it relates to education. You see, the Children's Hunger Project talked about food for kids, and food is the foundation for education. More than good schools, more than good teachers, more than good parents, more than good health even. If the child is not nourished properly, they cannot absorb knowledge, they behave improperly in class, all bad things that happen. But as I went through the years, I learned also that there's a difference in how different children succeed in school. And it became glaringly apparent to me that a child who is from a lower income family does not succeed in school as greatly or as successfully as a child from a middle class or upper financially secure family.
Right.
And it's not because the kids are dumber. The key is
the environment.
It's partly the environment, but it's zip code and opportunity.
Oh, gosh. So many times we talk about the zip code. And, you know, as I was preparing for the show this morning, I read something from Nelson Mandela. He said, education is the most powerful weapon for changing the world. And how true is that, right?
No question.
But in order to have the education, you have to have people that actually care about all zip codes. We have seen where politicians would take pictures with people in, you know, areas in Florida and other places around election time. But the truth of the matter is, like you said, those places need a functioning school. They need adults who care, mentors who care, good sidewalks, good businesses. They need to feel like someone appreciate them too.
Well, there's no question about what you've said, and in all due respect to the politicians, in spite of all the negatives that you could come up with, Brevard County happens to be quite fortunate because the public school system in Brevard County, contrary to what you hear about problems around the country or even around the state, is pretty darn good.
That's right. My children went to Brevard public schools.
It really is.
And they're all successful and went on to Florida universities. But you know what made the difference in their lives was parents. I watched them like a hawk. I was a helicopter parent. I wanted to know the friends, who the friends were, where they were going. I took license plates of parents that picked them up. I cared. But not every child have a nanny sita or a mean mom like me. So how do we get more people involved to do things like what you're doing?
Well, we have to first recognize what the problem is. Now, when we talk about zip code, a child doesn't do poorly in school just because they're from a lower income family. But if they're in a lower income family, oftentimes it's because their parents are in a low paying job. And the parents are in a low paying job because they themselves have not received a good enough education to indeed be able to get a better paying job. So the child's parents, they could be wonderful parents. This is no knock on any parent. But the parents may not recognize the value of an education. So when you take a child who is above grade level, that child needs support. Now the school partially gives that support in what they call the gifted and talented program. And that's a pretty good program here in Brevard County. It exists in schools all over the country. But when you get children who are above grade level and they are really past even what the gifted program can give, where do they go get that? Well, if you're in a wealthy family or a middle class family, you can get it by taking trips, get cultural opportunities, yeah. talk about things and books and programs other than football, baseball, soccer, and you know that
you become worldly.
Yes, you do. But a child who is from a lower income family does not have that opportunity. Now I'm talking about, you wouldn't think twice about, wow, let's take our kids to go see a play at Cocoa Playhouse or see a symphony, Brevard
Symphony
Orchestra.
Or even go to the Brevard Zoo. Some people can't even afford that ticket.
That's exactly right.
So is Aspiration Academy functional? Are you already in operation?
We've not started with our first school. Our first school actually will be starting this fall, which will be at University Park Elementary School. And that's thanks to the tremendous enthusiasm from Anna Diaz, who is the principal at University Park Elementary School. And you talk about even going to the zoo, for instance, as an example. Most kids in Brevard County have not been to the beach, and it's just over there. When you're poor, we have to get ourselves out of the thinking of a middle class or what we perceive to be as normal. So what we will do, quite simply, is Monday through Friday, after school hours, we will mentor and coach these children who are above grade level, give them the same type of emphasis and push that an athlete would get if they were athletically inclined.
So you're going to be like a fairy godfather.
Well, more than that. We're going to be even more than that. And then on Saturdays, we will provide them with cultural opportunities that the families may not be able to afford. We will take them to Kennedy Space Center. We will take them to the Brevard Zoo. We will take them to the Daytona Children's Museum or the Orlando Science Museum.
And you have a team doing this? Volunteers plus yourself?
Mostly volunteers at the present time.
And have to have a vehicle? You have to buy a bus?
Well,
consent sign?
We're waiting for that angel to show up because we will need a bus, similar to a school bus or a smaller one that some of the nursing homes use and be able to transport the children. And then to make sure that the parents understand, or the guardian, or the grandparents who are bringing up grandchildren understand, we will include them in all the things that we do. We will also
so it's
take
a family experience.
Exactly right. We're not just going to take a busload of kids and take them to Kennedy Space Center. We're going to take the family.
So you're starting out at one elementary school first.
Yes.
And then you're hoping to branch out into other ones.
The only thing that held the Children's Hunger Project back from one school with 27 kids to now 48 schools and 3,000 kids every week is money. No money, no mission. It's as simple as that. So we will start out at University Park Elementary School, and as funding grows, so will our mission grow to the second school and the third school and eventually all the elementary schools.
And now Ellen is a musician, and she also helps build website and things like this. Can she be one of those people that, if you're looking for volunteers, can volunteer to help with something like music?
No question, because the child knows music from what their parents know listening to music on the radio, whether it's rap music or country music or opera, whatever the case may be. But when you bring in musicians to a group of kids or bring them to a place where musicians, all of a sudden, that spark of interest that may have been latent there since birth could blossom immediately. And now we're going to emphasize reading and math. So now they can read about the instruments. They may be interested in playing an instrument. We will expose them to these type of things. The schools can't do all of this.
That's
the schools spend the money with the strings attached from the state, wherever they get the funding from. And they do a terrific job, Dr. Mullins in particular and his team. But these children need much, much more.
They need
more.
A little more. They need the hands-on experience.
No question.
I'll take it from there.
Well, musicianship is not just about just the creative art of it, although that's a big part of it, and that's what people think. There's a lot of math involved. There's a lot of when you're changing chords, when you're changing keys. You know, the bass players and musicians talk in 1-3-5-7s. So, and you have to know what those different things are. So it's not just about you. Sometimes people kind of negate certain things of experience, like what you're saying, experiential learning, just like Dr. Lisa Soto was talking about earlier, too, that experiential learning. You don't know what a child is going to blossom from
that
based on
moment,
one little
right?
thing. And like I said, it could be learning the guitar, learning guitar chords, but you don't realize the math that's involved behind it and the way the didactic thinking that comes in and the divergent thinking that comes in when you're adding creativity and math and you're kind of combining those together because now you're using both sides of the brain, which they wouldn't maybe have done before.
So, Mr. Barnes, you're focusing primarily on the children that are already above grade level and lower income families.
That is correct.
So tell our listeners why those two. It kind of goes together, right?
Well, they do. Interestingly enough, in a typical elementary school class, there really are four groups of kids. One consists mostly of kids that we call average. They're at grade level, and that's terrific. You have a second group of kids that are struggling, and they get extra attention already, both from the teacher, and there are separate state funds that address kids that are struggling. The third group are children who are athletically inclined. Mm-hmm. And if you know how to play football, baseball, basketball, soccer, or any other sport, you're going to get guided and coached and mentored and pushed in a direction that will help you excel. But that fourth group of children are kids who are already above grade level. And most people think, well, if the kids are already above grade level, they don't need any help. But that's as horrible a myth as you can possibly imagine.
You know, I never thought of it that way, but you are opening my eyes, because what you're saying is the kids from the lower income families who are above, they want that little extra to do something else, to go on the weekend on a field trip, or maybe go to a summer camp, or experience something cultural, but they don't have the funds.
Let me put it in a little, me personally, they wanted to skip me the first three grades of school, first, second, third grade, they kept wanting to skip me in school. And my mom said no, because now she's going to be socially distant from her own peer group when she gets older, which is going to be more important. So she threw me in every sport, every art class that she could possibly find to keep me busy, because when I wasn't doing that and I was bored at school, I was acting out and doing things that I wouldn't normally do. But as soon as she threw me in art class,
you kept busy.
Kept me busy and kept me, and not with a computer in front of me, but actually going and doing things with my hands, gardening, like I said, art, all of those
sewing.
Different things. All of those things. They became like part of my life, but I didn't realize what she was doing then.
She was
But
smart.
All of a sudden, I was better in school. I wasn't getting disciplined at school as much. And all of a sudden, it started creating a different feeling for me. And we weren't poor necessarily, but we did have a huge family like you did.
Right.
So there wasn't a whole lot of money being thrown around.
But why cultural things, though? Because, I mean, you're saying that in addition to the math and science and penmanship and social studies and history and all that, you want them to experience cultural things, which I think is terrific. But tell us why zeroing on that.
It's an important reason. See, you don't even think about it. And before I got involved in the charity business, I didn't think about it. But you actually learn things when you are involved with culture. When you take a child and see a play at Coco Playhouse, you talk about the actors, you talk about the play, you go see Les Mis, and all of a sudden you start talking about the French Revolution or whatever the play may be. So it opens up conversations and lines of thought
that normally you wouldn't talk about.
That's exactly right. And if you never experience these things, then you don't even know what you don't know. That's the saddest part. And oftentimes, the parent doesn't know what they don't know. So it isn't the fact that they're bad parents. They just don't know how to address it and bring out those things that, as your parents did.
Yeah. But how would you know at University Park which children are going to be in the program or not? Who's going to be eligible to get in? How do you decide who's going to get in?
Well, that's a terrific question. Keep in mind that outsiders, such as me, who I'm not part of the actual school system itself, I'm not privy to any of the testing or the background of any of the children. That's private and confidential. But the teachers know. Many kids who are tested and are in the gifted and talented, they're already identified. However, many kids who are gifted and talented could be brilliant, but they don't test well. There could be cultural reasons for that. I had a very smart woman, a PhD, tell me one time that she and her daughter were glancing at a book and it was all about going to a dude ranch. And the girl asked her mom, what's a ranch? Now, you stop to think about that. Everyone knows what a ranch is.
Yeah.
But if you only live in a neighborhood of low income and you've never been out of that neighborhood.
You don't know what a ranch is, yeah.
The ranch is like a foreign word.
Yeah.
You talk about Kennedy Space Center and space. If you've not experienced and have knowledge about stuff like that in conversations or in school, you have no concept.
Well, you raise a great point because, you know, we've spoken to so many people here on Viewpoint with Sita and friends, Ellen and I, who are barely making their rent. By the time you pay rent and you pay for health insurance and you put gas on the car and you put the new tires on the car and you buy food and clothing and shoes and pay your utilities, there is no money left to visit the Brevard Zoo.
Exactly,
or
right.
Go to see Les Mis or maybe go to the Kennedy Space Center. I know people that save for years just to afford a ticket at Disney.
Yes.
And so what you're doing is exceptional. It's beautiful because we always focus on feeding the people, the children, feeding the homeless and trying to get people an affordable home and all that. But what you're saying is you're creating human beings who later on, through culture and art and everything else, would give back to this world.
No question. But something will happen even before they're able to give back. And here's why it's so important to take these children who are above grade level, as Ellen pointed out. When these kids are advanced intellectually, easy for them to get bored with school. I'm a classic example, and I wouldn't publicly tell you all that happened during the course of my scholastic career, other than the fact that I probably skipped school more than any kid in the history of the world. The reality is that...
Were you a surfer?
Pardon me?
Surfing?
I'm not committing to anything in public. But if you look at the children who drop out of school, students who drop out of school, usually by around 16 years old, anywhere from 15 to 30% of them had previously been identified as gifted and talented. That's the most horrific thing I've ever heard about children.
It's a waste of a mind.
Waste of a mind.
Right.
And once, if you don't graduate high school with a powerful knowledge of reading and math, you have not received an education.
You're doomed.
You are doomed because there's a whole host of jobs you cannot get without being able to read properly and be able to understand math.
So one of the things that parents have nowadays, one of the issues is the issue of trust.
Yes.
They're going to have to trust you and their volunteers to take their children to places. So you're saying that you're going to take the parents as well, or the mentors, or the grandparents.
That's exactly right.
So you eradicate that factor of, oh, I'm afraid to send my child.
Yes. Well, listen, all the people who get involved with us will have background checks. You don't get involved with public school children.
That's right.
Brevard County has a pretty powerful background check program. So just because someone wants to volunteer, it's not like packing food in a warehouse.
It doesn't mean they're going to get in, right?
That's exactly
so for
right.
Our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. Bob Barnes, who is the founder of Aspiration Academy, and what a great organization this is already. So what is your mission statement? Every organization has a mission statement, and I'm pretty sure you have your elevator speech when someone asks you, what is your mission statement?
Well, I do, but... I want people to go to the website and read the mission statement, but let me tell you what our business plan and concept is. You know, when I created the Children's Hunger Project, I had a 9-word business plan. See a hungry kid, buy food, feed the kid. It's that simple. Now, that's been our modus operation, operating concept for over a decade now. And there are 7 words involved with Aspiration Academy. One is see young scholars, challenge potential, celebrate success. In other words, keep it simple. Now, if you'd like, I can read the mission statement. It's about
I think we have 4 minutes, and if it's your time, if you could read it, that's fine. But before you start reading it, there has to be you have a website where people could go on if they want to get involved.
Yes.
Because right now, if someone's listening and they said, listen, I've got a couple $100 where I could sponsor a ticket to Disney, or I have a couple $100 where I could send a family to the Brevard Zoo, that would be welcome by folks in your organization.
No question. And we would wait, we would also welcome $1 million that would really fund the operation and expand. I'm being serious when I say that, by the way.
And there are people that have no children. They got a lot of money, and they're going to be leaving this planet soon. And they should actually say, you know what, I'm going to put that in my will.
That would be terrific. Well, they can very, very simply go to aspirationacademy.org. And if they just put that in, just don't forget everything else you know about websites. Just put in those words, aspirationacademy.org. It'll take it to our website. You'll be able to see a page where they can contact me through the website. They'll be able to learn about our operation, why we're doing it, why we're starting at an elementary school, why in the third grade, why we're catering to kids from low-income families, why we're catering kids to who are above grade level, why we're taking them on cultural trips. All of that is outlined.
Well, you know what we did when we were younger? We would have a chalkboard, and we kept busy teaching each other in the garage. Then my mother kept us busy in the garden, and they kept us busy sewing. Then they kept us busy learning to take care of our brothers and sisters. And most important, they took us to temple to learn religion.
Yes.
So we were kept busy from morning till night because our parents decided we were not going to get bored. But not everybody has that.
No.
So really quick, if you just want to tell us something about the mission statement, Paul's telling us 2 more minutes. Whatever you can tell us about the mission, that's fine.
Well, basically what we're going to do is to create an opportunity. The two keys to success, as I said at the beginning, were zip code and opportunity. I cannot change the zip code where a child lives, but I can change the opportunity that the child has to do better in school, and consequently they will do better in life and they will not be a burden on society. One other thing, this is a 501c nonprofit charity, so everything we do will be at no cost to the Brevard Public School System and no charge to the taxpayers of Brevard County.
So you're creating people who later on will give back, not just financially and emotionally and physically, mentally, culturally as well.
No question.
Ellen, what a great segment. I feel like I know Mr. Barnes all my life, and your bio is so extensive. I wish there were more people like you, Mr. Barnes, that realized that they have this vast amount of knowledge to give back from the heart, because it shows you do care about humanity and you care about us here in Brevard. And I thank you for coming on our show. I really do. So give us the website one more time.
AspirationAcademy.org.
And we've posted everything right now. I just posted everything on our website as well as our Facebook page. And we will get as many people to acknowledge and understand about Aspiration Academy, as well as the Marine Resource Council, our education process today of being, when we know better, when we know more, we do better, right?
That's right. And we can't help you if you were born in a certain zip code, but we'd give you the opportunity.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Yes. Absolutely. Another fantastic segment here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week here at 1 p.m. on 1510 WWBC.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.